Hey, this is Cleveland Brown, and you're listening to the About Last Night podcast. I guess your TV must be broken. Haha, just kidding. Actually, I'm not kidding. You're bored.
Hey guys, Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Happy Monday! New episode. About time, baby. Oh, it's been a minute. Oh yeah. Did you guys have a good weekend? What a great weekend. I was in Vegas, and then I went to Austin, and then I went to a wedding. And then I went to Hamilton and saw a kid with a mullet sit in front of me. I don't know what was more impressive. That's a joke. Hamilton's one of the greatest things I've ever seen in my entire life. Inspired me. I want to write a musical. I think I'm going to do that. I don't know when. Sooner or later? Who knows? Tonight I had an amazing night at the Comedy Store as well. I got to share this real quick before the episode starts. Larry David comes in to the Comedy Store. I'm sitting there. I had three shows tonight. Long Beach Laugh Factory, Hollywood Improv, Comedy Store in the middle. And I'm about to bounce to go to the Improv, and I see my buddy Harlan Williams, and we start just, you know, sharing a goof and a laugh. And he goes, come to the patio. Let's, you know, catch up. We start shooting the shit, and he goes, look at this, Larry David. And I'm thinking, you know, it's just Harlan's way of being like, look at this fucking, you know, just got, you know, he's just got that offbeat brand of silliness that you're just like, you never know. And I look over, and I'm like, holy shit, it's actually Larry David walking down the hill to the Comedy Store. He hasn't been there in 37 years, he ends up telling me later on. Harlan's like, you should go say something, because he knows I did an episode. So I go, all right, I'm like, should I? I don't know if he'll remember me from, you know, the rap party was the last time I saw him. And so I walk up, and he sees me and goes, Adam! I go, Larry! We start shooting the shit. He tells me how great my scene came out in the episode that's, I think it's episode 9, but he tells me how great it was, and I'm going to be really pleased, and oh my God, it was amazing. Then he goes, yeah, Pete Davidson asked me to come down, and I might, I'm working out my monologue for SNL in a few weeks. So I take him to the main room. He's like, I show him the backstage area. He sees how big the room is. He just goes, nah, it's all right. Yeah, I'm okay. I don't think so. And I go, okay, all right. I go, what about the original room? It's smaller, kind of safer. People work out monologues there for award shows and whatnot. Goes in there, he sits. He's like, nah, I don't know. I'm just not feeling it tonight. Then Pete comes in and begs him. And he goes in and he crushes, and it was unbelievable. So, what a night! I was on a cloud 9, a cloud 12. I go to the Improv, and it was just, I don't want to say I slayed, but I had a really good set and it was really fun. And I just was so locked in, man. An ego boost from one of your heroes like that, and then just it was awesome. So anyway, speaking of awesome, today's episode. One of the creators of the 5-4 clothing brand company. Have you heard of 5-4? Yeah, probably. I rock it a lot. Brad rocks it. Zac Efron rocks it. Cody Bellinger rocks it. Chris Paul rocks it. Blake Griffin rocks it. Name a cool-ass celebrity that rocks this men's clothing line that, you know, curates these packages. We've talked about them on the pod before. It's one of the best companies out there that really changed the game as far as online shopping goes and personalized shopping for dudes. 54club.com is the website where you can go start you know, living and looking and loving the best version of yourself. You know what I'm saying? This isn't even an ad. I'm just telling you because I do it. I use 54, and if you sign up right now, you get 50% off your first month plus a pair of sunglasses. And our guest drops another private code in which you can get even more of a discount if you sign up. So this is an episode worth listening all the way through, not only for the discount, but the story, man. Starting a fucking killer clothing company that's dominating the fashion game. How does it happen? Well, you get to hear today with our guest, Andres Iscaeta, who is one of the, again, creators and founders of 5-4 Group. Again, this episode is just one of these episodes I take real exception to, because not a comedian, not an actor, but a fucking creator and innovator and savvy ass business dude. And we had a lot of laughs too. He's a super funny dude. He's how I met and really got to know Jaleel White. So added bonus there. And anyway, enjoy this episode. I know you will. And again, sign up for 5-4 Club because it's the shit. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. Andres is on Twitter at Andres Iscaeta, spelled Izqueta. Follow the podcast at ALN Podcast. Follow Brad at Funny Brad. Tour dates. Brad this weekend is going to be in Denver. The Comedy Works, October 26th through 28th. Tickets at bradwilliamscomedy.com. This week, well, Brad and I, tomorrow actually, are both in New York filming Comedy Knockout for True TV. But then, October 26th, I'm going to be headlining The Rec Room in Orange County in Huntington Beach, actually. October 26th, 8 p.m. Come out and see me. October 28th, I'm doing the Setlist show at the Nerd Melt at 8 p.m. Setlist Nerd Melt on Sunset Boulevard. That's a comic book store. 8 p.m. Setlist show. November 3rd, Bucknell University with Adam Devine. November 4th and 5th, I'm doing Levity Live in Oxnard, California with Brad Williams. November 7th in San Diego, I'm headlining Lestat's. It's a tiny little coffee shop. Can't wait for that. Going to run my only hour that I'm trying to get. I'm trying to get that shit tight, baby. November 8th, I'm headlining Stand Up Live in Phoenix, Arizona. And, of course, November 10th to the 12th, Tempe, Arizona, Tempe Improv. November 10th through the 12th. Cannot wait. Tempe. Get your tickets for all those shows at AdamRayComedy.com. AboutLastNightPodcast.com. The new site is launched, so go there and get past and present episodes. So many killer episodes coming up. Subscribe on iTunes. Tell your friends. Tell your family. Rate and comment on the iTunes page and email us at AboutLastNightPod@gmail.com. Your favorite alien moments. Where you get the pod. Why you got into it. Why you love it. And we're going to read some of those moments when the new merch comes shortly. And we're going to send a lot of free merch out, so be subscribed so you can get all that. Cool. Now that we got the Two Dates Twitter handles and merch info out of the way, sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with 5-4 Club creator, founder, Andres.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast. It's about last night.
You can throw those cans on if you want. If you like the sound of your own voice.
Nobody does. Not your voice specifically.
I have to put these on or
you
not?
Don't have to.
I don't have to.
Yeah. That's what helps you.
But definitely pull the mic. Let's see, like maybe to the... There you go, like that.
There you go.
I think we find that's like a good balance so you can see both of our faces. How are you?
I'm good.
So you said you're dressed... because you have a full day.
I have a full day.
I feel like every day is a full day for you.
Every day.
Like I visit you at the 5-4 office, yeah. I mean, it's like, I feel privileged to even get face-to-face time and not having some courier come out and be like...
No, it's funny because like the last time you came, I was juggling in between two meetings. I actually wanted to like chat with you for 10, 15 just to,
I appreciate
to catch
that.
Up. But it's like one meeting delays, it goes into the other meeting, and then, you know...
Yeah,
and I'm a late person to begin with.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty bad. I'm late today.
Has that always?
It's not. Yeah, it's
just also maybe, the nature.
I think it's a Latin thing too.
Oh, is it?
I didn't want to say anything as a white guy because I don't want to be like that guy. That's just like, well, you people. Like, I don't want to do that shit.
Wait, is that a known? Latin late
on.
Well, yeah. Just I mean, it's like it's either, for instance. We produce some stuff in Mexico, and it's always late. And the joke is like, yeah, it's on Mexico time, you know?
Yeah. Mexico time, it's island time, or I have a black friend who says CP time.
Right.
And
Now, do black people make fun of how late Latin people are? Like,
I think it's...
Jaleel actually makes fun of me a lot about it.
Okay.
Always on time.
Yeah, and he's very punctual.
Yeah, I'm not.
Now, like,
and it's like it literally goes all the way from Spain to South America to Mexico. It's just a cultural thing. I don't know.
Now here's something. Like when you have all these meetings, do you have an assistant that has like everything together? Do you
is good about like stating that hey, you have say it's 3:58 and you have your 4 o'clock here.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm in like a vibe, a rhythm. An inspiration, a creative moment. It's hard to just stop at that.
Right.
I've been trying to be better about it, but
yeah.
If you're in the vibe, you're the vibe. You
sure.
Know?
Where do you find your vibe? And that's the first time I've asked that question ever on this podcast.
It's the first for everything.
I think there was a talk show on BET in the 80s.
It was.
Yeah.
It was also a line from the band Next.
Yeah.
Right. So it depends on the context. So for instance, if it's like. a specific fashion inspiration, it's usually through travel. Like if I'm in a certain city, whether I'm in like say London, Tokyo, Copenhagen, whatever. Mm-hmm.
Do you go out of your way to find inspiration from travel? Like, I mean, I know you love to travel for like, you're a big foodie and like you always are taking these amazing, like you might be the only person on Instagram that I'm like, take more food photos.
Right.
Because
right.
they're actually foods I've never seen.
Right.
They're in places I want to go to.
Right.
You were like frame them up in a way where I'm like, that looks appetizing.
Right.
It's not just like, hey, crab cakes in Santa Monica. Fucking,
right.
We've all seen that shit.
Yeah.
And nobody cares.
That's too accessible.
Yeah. But I mean, do you go out of your way to travel because you're like, oh, there's going to be some unexpected.
Yeah. So I'm usually like on the road once a month. And I would say, I'd say that 12 months of the year, 9 to 10 months of them are for work. And then 2 months are for personal.
Yeah.
Meaning I'm not traveling for the entire month, obviously. I'm traveling 2 days to 14 days.
Yeah, sure.
I like. You know, I don't like to be anywhere in one place. For me, if I'm in LA for more than like 4 weeks at a time, it drives me insane.
Dude, I'm the exact same way. Brad, do you feel that way? I mean, this guy travels every weekend.
Yeah, but I haven't been on the road. And I was just thinking about this. I'm going to Kansas City by the time this podcast comes out. I've already been in Kansas City. The crowds are wonderful. but like, I haven't been on the road because I was doing the wedding stuff. So I was here for 3 weeks and I'm definitely going a little stir crazy.
Yeah.
And before
you're used to it, and also there's something about, I don't know, dude, and maybe it's we crave the experience of I don't know what's gonna, like getting into a routine is fine, but we're all creatives and routine is like not conducive, I feel like, for, I mean it is,
yeah,
because like you should have organization, but like my life is organized chaos and I kind of like it that way, where
right.
it's like I'm at the point where I probably could use a little bit of help, but I also like, it feeds the beast a little bit, the way
right.
I, you know, organize things. But
yeah, I think for me, it's about just, you know, seeing people, culture, places. And there's something from inspiration to just like acts of things being funny.
Yeah.
Of going to so many places throughout the world. Also allows you to appreciate the life that we get to live in LA. That I think after being across the world in most big cities, it's the best
great.
City in the world to live in. It's not the best city in the world to eat and drink or to party or to whatever it is.
Just overall.
Like, if I have to assess life with like say 10 to 20 variables, it's going to win overall.
Yeah. What you're saying is that if cities were like street fighters, like there's some street fighters that are like E-Honda that are fat but powerful, so they're not quick.
Yeah.
And then there's other guys that are like really quick. And
right.
then so like Chun-Li, really
right.
fast but doesn't have everything. But then you get a guy like Ken Ryu, Guile, just
right.
like kind of down the middle of the road.
Right.
Yeah, blue collar guys.
Yeah, I just lost like half of our listeners.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Video games, what?
Wait, what's the best food country? What's the best party country based on your experience?
Best food country in the world, I'd say overall. Best city or country? Best city.
Great question. Best city.
Best city, Tokyo. Yeah. Best country, Japan. Best country, Italy.
Well, just I'm going to agree.
Oh, just overall, everywhere you've
best
been in
partying,
Italy.
Yeah. Best party city,
Spain.
I'd say, is
Ibiza.
Yeah.
Best party city, I'd say, is Mykonos. Best party country, I'd say, is probably Spain.
My boy Adam Devine was just in Mykonos, and he was just like looking like he was living
up. It's the most lit place in the world.
That sounds Greek. Is that Greece?
No, Italy.
Mykonos, Greece, yeah.
Oh, Greece, okay.
Greece, yeah.
Greece, I thought it was Italy.
Mykonos isn't Greece, bro. Come on.
Yeah. Wait. I got it. Because I was like, that sounds like a yogurt.
Mykonos.
Is there a place in Italy that sounds similar?
Amalfi, no.
With an M?
I think.
Maybe he did go to Greece. All right.
Trust me, all the perverts come back to the world.
Whoa.
Oh, so the perverts. All the way down to like family people.
Yeah.
It's literally like the craziest party people. And then also I've seen families with babies. It's what you want to
and
make
then like
it.
The babies have sunglasses and glow sticks and even they're raving.
Right, 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 right.
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 Now, have you always been this kind of person that is, how do I say this? Worldly? A Renaissance man? Have you always been enjoying travel?
I mean, yeah. So I think, you know, part of it is also like your culture. So I come from a family that we speak Spanish at home, and my ethnic breakdown is Lebanese, Spanish, and Ecuadorian. So I've always had this appreciation just because of the diversity of my background. And then growing up in LA, you're exposed to being friends with white kids, black kids, Asian kids, Latin kids, et cetera, et cetera. So I've always had enjoyed going to their homes when I grew up and eating my friends' family's Korean food or eating Mexican, whatever it is, right? So I think for me, I've always been appreciative. And then when I had the opportunity to go out and travel and learn and experience new people and culture, then that's really what, like, I think that's kind of what makes me who I am now is that I have this, like, thirst for just more. And every time I land in a place, even though I've been there before, it's just more the excitement and the adrenaline that comes to you when you're, like, searching and discovering things and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. And now, has there ever been a food that you looked at where you're like, nope, not touching that. Absolutely not.
No.
No, really. So
because even if you
there's
recognize
some shit
it.
In China that I've seen that I'm like, yo, bro, that thing in the fish tank doesn't look kosher. But
then that makes you probably also want to be like, well, that makes me double down.
But I've eaten like
curious.
The chicken head. I don't know if that's that crazy. In India, I ate goat brain. I was really wasted, so it helped, but it was really good.
What did it taste like? They deep fry it?
It kind of tasted like a weird curry lentil, if that makes any sense.
Kind of. Okay.
Yeah. And they give you like the naan.
But it's not like they take it straight out of the goat head and just fucking scoop it out and put it in a bowl.
I don't
know.
I ate it off a street stand, so probably.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Street stand goat brain?
It's funny. I've only gone sick from fancy places. I've never gone sick from street food. And I eat some crazy street food.
Wow. So
all over the world. Not so like when LA, some guy, Mexican truck at 2 a.m. drunk.
So when some guy just has a hot plate. And there's a goat without a head, and there's a sizzling on the grill.
I didn't see the goat there, so
you're like,
I don't know what the process was, but no, the theory is of like
health coat on the side of the building.
But
fuck
if the
it.
Dude's there every day, then if people get sick, he would have been stabbed or killed by one of his local patrons at some point, right? So it's usually not going to be that because he's already
got it,
you know. Tried and tested it.
So when you're walking around downtown Los Angeles and you see the guy with the hot dogs wrapped in bacon, you're like, bring it.
Or do you ever ask him, like, can you put some goat brain on this?
Yeah.
Like, are you?
Yeah, I don't ask him if it's farm to table or anything.
By the way, that term confuses me, because isn't everything farm to table?
In this case, it is farm to table. Well, make a farm to process center at the table.
It all starts at farm. It all ends up at table, like, to me. Like,
at some point.
Yeah.
What matters is what's
maybe
in between.
Some middlemen.
Right.
I'm not sure.
Did the... the start of 5-4 Club come from a travel situation where you...
Well, no. So I started 5-4 as a brand 15 years ago in 2002. First 10 years, we did primarily retail and wholesale. We had 3 stores in LA, sold in 1,000 stores like Macy's, Nordstrom, etc. 2012, we launched 5-4 Club. Truthfully, 5-4 Club was launched because we were desperate and we ran out of ideas of what to do.
Oh, really?
At that point, from 2008 to 2012, the state of retail was very challenging, and it's become very challenging again now. So it was just more of an idea that we'd come up with and said, like, okay, we see this opportunity in the market, and men don't actually like to shop. They care enough to look good, at least some men. Mm-hmm. And so we conceptualized this concept, basically the 5-4 Club, where you pay $60 a month and you get 2 items typically per month. One month and be like a pair of jeans and a sweater. Next month, a jacket and a t-shirt. Next month, a button-down and a sweatshirt. So for $60, you get essentially, like, if you're comparing it to market brands out there in the mall, like a J. Crew or Gap in terms of your quality, has more of a 5-4 flavor to it, like a modern classic. And what's beautiful about it is that we get to choose for you what you get. And the idea is that since we send you something that essentially is a surprise in a box every single month, it's taking the onus of the idea of being an explorer, being a discoverer. So it's like when you wear your 5-4, go out and conquer the world, go out and kill that job, go out and kill that date. Go out and explore Paris or whatever.
Don't kill that person, but
kill the person.
Eat that goat brain.
Eat that goat brain, though, for sure.
Hey, I'm wearing 5-4 right now, and I'll say this. Some of the shit you've given me is like, I mean, it's all dope, but there's some that I'll wear for auditions or like certain meetings, and like, dude, there is an extra level of like swagger that I feel when I'm, because the material is just so like, I don't know. It just, you know, and like
when
you're
going for that Brad Pitt biopic.
For sure, dude. That's coming up. Now, when I play Brad Williams in the Brad Williams story.
Hey, that, you know,
what is it called? Coming Out of the Treehouse? What do we say the title was?
I don't know.
Yeah, so many titles for your biopic.
Farm to Table Cookie. something like that. I'm not sure.
Wait, but I want to know this. How difficult is it to, when you first 5-4 started, and you brushed over very quickly, just, we got an MMA season, Nordstrom, but like, to me, that seems bonkers to even get your product into a big department store.
Yeah, because so I feel like everyone has those ideas, like, oh, you know what they should do is have a razor that also jerks you off. Like, yeah, and then
can we get that,
like,
in Rite Aid?
Yeah, how do you actually get that into those kind of stores?
Yeah, I mean, so for the first 2-3 years, we struggled. It was like very grassroots in the sense, you know, took backpacks, went to trade shows, eventually created a collection that was able to be good enough to get a sales rep, and then the sales rep has the infrastructure and the connection. At least this is how the old model worked. The new model is literally completely way different.
The new model seems like it's the Wild West, where you just put your stuff on the internet, you create an app, you have some tech, have a website.
Yeah. Post. Today's the easiest and the most challenging time to do apparel. Easiest because the barrier to entry is so low, because you can create a Shopify website. Yeah, an Instagram account,
Etsy store, whatever. Etsy the store, hell.
Whatever it is, right?
Because you can just create a logo.
You can do it in like days, and produce product. I mean, it's not so simple, but there's a process.
Easier, yes. Mm-hmm.
It's easier. Scalability is where it's the most challenging, because as you now know too, like, for instance, to become an entertainer in some way, shape, or form is easy, because there's YouTube, there's Instagram, there's this platform, that platform. Yeah. Anyone can have a podcast. Anyone can have a voice, essentially. And then if you're a voice, you're a personality or entertainer. Same thing in clothing. It's like, for instance, if you look at the brands that dominated, say, billions of dollars 20 years ago, maybe it was like 100 to 200 brands. Now it's tens of thousands of brands that dominate that same dollar.
Anyone can start.
And there's a lot of brands out there that do like $1 million to $5 million a year that are content being in that pocket range.
Sure.
That now, like, there's so much more. Just the market's so fragmented now. So I think that's the biggest difference between today and before. There's the most opportunity. Scalability to me is the biggest challenge, because we've been lucky that we've been able to scale. But once you to break out of that smaller mold was very challenging.
Yeah, and you guys also the subscription service that you have. Mm-hmm. You guys were I was racking my brain, because now it seems like there's a few different clothing companies, apps that have something similar, but you guys are one of the first out of the gate, and I think that's key too, is to where when people hear of another brand and another male clothing subscription service, they go, oh, like 5-4 Club.
Yep,
right.
You're like the YouTube of
right. Yeah. You know? So in menswear, we were the first ones, and we're still the market leader. Obviously there's copycats out there, and you know, to us, competition, if anything, only allows us to make ourselves better. And so, you know, we've also evolved a lot. So for instance, in the last year we launched 3 new brands that are non-subscription based, all direct to consumer. We launched a footwear brand called New Republic by Mark McNary. We launched an activewear brand called Grand AC.
Grand Athletic Club.
Grand Athletic Club.
Yeah, and then Oshenta?
Oshenta is the eyewear brand.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we have now a suite of products, and we're launching next month a e-com platform called 54man.com, which is basically our, I hate to say the word one-stop shop, but it's like a one-stop shop for men. We own all the brands, so we're able to provide the customer high-quality, fashion-forward, accessibly price point products to the consumer, where almost everything's under $100.
That's something I really want to put out there.
So that product is like similar in competition, at least what we create for 5-4 Man, to a Zara, an ASOS, a Topshop, an H&M. The product that we create in 5-4 Club, because it's a little bit more classic based, that product is more comparable to like a Uniqlo, Gap, or a J. Crew. So depending on who the customer is, we have product that basically speaks to all types of guys, whether you're a classic guy. So then you're going to be either maybe a 5-4 Club member. Because
what if I want to dress like the Monopoly man? Do you have something for me?
No, that's maybe more of like a Rose Bowl vibe or something. You got to go dig it up yourself.
Yeah, but I will say that there are, like you said, there are copycats out there. And I've looked on some of them, and a lot of the stuff, it's like, oh, that's $42 for a pair of boxers.
Right.
I'm not a fan of that. Like,
yeah, I think that the consumer now obviously has so many options, so they're able to obviously, you know, like the consumer now, the difference between the consumer today and the consumer even maybe 10 years ago is that if you showed something to the consumer, this shirt costs $60 or whatever it is, that consumer was like, they can make a decision there quickly if they're going to buy it or not. You tell the consumer today that shirt is $60, he's going to go on his phone, open up 5 browsers, see where he can get that shirt the cheapest, see if there's a code online to get it at a better rate, or maybe even go to H&M or Zara.com and see if they can get that look for a cheaper price.
Yeah.
So the millennial, specifically the millennial, how they shop and consume is radically different than how the old generation is.
Mm-hmm.
So the old generation is discovering... Sorry, the old generation discovered brands by going to the mall. Like when I used to grow up, when I grew up, I discovered brands at the mall.
Did you like going to the mall?
Like a magazine. Oh, yeah. I used to spend all my money at the mall.
Yeah.
And it was like
the mall was a shit.
Polo and Tommy. That's all I wore.
Me too. The mall experience, I feel like, is still there. Like I still, but I mean, come on, man. It's almost like the movie theater where it's like it's different now that you can stream so much. Like there's
why go,
there is just less people. Like I've never been to a theater and been like, I can't find a seat.
I have to go to the theater. I haven't been in the theater in 2 years, and I have to go to the theater in the next week because my friend just produced a movie that came out, and I promised that I would go see the movie.
Yeah,
so I'm gonna go see the movie, but
hey, man.
I'd rather just wait till it streams.
Yeah,
I can just buy. I'd rather pay $30 and stream it in my bedroom.
Yeah.
Than to go to the mall, get the Uber, get there.
Dude, yeah.
Wait
yeah,
in hell, line. You can
even. Yeah, you can even go to 7-Eleven and get all the same damn snacks.
There you go, bro. Or Postmate it.
Yeah.
Even better.
Yeah, we're getting to a point now where everything is so easy and at your will.
You don't have to leave if you can afford it.
You really don't have to leave your place. Ever. Like once sex robots come out, it's done.
Well,
right.
Did you see the report that they hackers can now please tell me you read this article where hackers can hack the sex robots and make them kill you. I just read that article on like New York Times.
That sounds like a
so
movie.
Don't sleep with a sex robot.
Can you imagine, dude, the first guy that fucks a robot and it all of a sudden just goes and goes like, fuck you, motherfucker. Or like, you know, no more dick or whatever the catchphrase is. Like, I'm going to fuck you up. No more dick. I don't know.
I mean,
I think their sentence structure is probably a little off, but their violence is at an all-time high. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I mean, look, I've never even fucked with, like, there's fleshlights. You know, have you heard of those? They're like flashlights, basically, that you... Fuck, it's supposed to feel like a got vagina.
You essentially jerk yourself off with a tennis ball tube. Like
pretty much,
yeah.
So there's that. There's obviously dolls.
There should be a subscription to that.
I mean, there probably is. There's really
tubefuckers.com.
At this point, anything I think of, and I'm like, nah, that's crazy. I'm like, not anymore, man.
Right.
Where there's a will, there's a way. Has been like
there's an audience for everything.
Yes.
Yeah. And you've taken out some of the most annoying stuff for men because just the mall experience, going parking, like you don't know if you pay for parking, is it free, it's finding parking sometimes, just and then finding just that style of clothing that is good for you. Like I've been walking around stores and most people are like looking at me like, hey, Baby Gap's that way, asshole. And I'm like, hey, no, I want some good shit.
Yeah.
And I'm wearing a 5'4 shirt right now. You guys have fit me. I know that the more you use your product, the more you guys get familiar with the styles that the person likes.
Right.
So for you, they'll be like, oh, we have 22 different bandanas this month.
Right.
Yeah.
We do not ship bandanas.
Yeah. When did you start rocking the bandana? It's a very unique and dope look. And I feel like you're my only friend that rocks it.
It's a gardener chic.
Probably 3 years.
Oh, yeah? Years?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I feel like I'm always curious with any sort of, like, I'll go in and out of bracelets, you know? And, like, I used to, there was a one point when I was wearing them all the time. And I stopped, and then I was like, maybe I should get a watch.
I think I was at the Rose Bowl at the flea market, and I saw this vendor wearing it, but he was wearing it in a different way. And then I just decided to, like, adopt it.
Yeah.
And I'd worn it before, but it was more like, oh, yeah, Coachella in the dust storm.
Yeah.
So then I started to rock it, and now I wear a bandana maybe like 3-4 days a week.
Nice.
Now
it's just a nice little touch point.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
That makes you different from everyone.
Wait, what's the occasion that you'll go, I gotta go no bandana on this one? Is there a dinner or like black a person tie that you know is like, Like, is there, if you're meeting with somebody,
I don't like doing black tie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if I obviously do black tie, I can't wear a bandana. I look like an asshole.
unless you're Johnny Depp. I feel like that guy has a scarf for every
situation.
Unless
there's something little serious to it, where there's a tone of seriousness, then that's when I do.
You're not
going
to go bandana to a funeral.
No. Well, you may need to cry.
Yeah, see? And everyone's looking around for tissue, and you're like,
I got you covered. Yeah. Now, you seem to have found success with this. Now, did you have any ideas that you tried out that didn't work?
A lot. So, obviously, like, the first 10 years of my career.
I'm so curious about that. And where did you even, if we can just go a little bit before that. Yeah. Like, so, you grew up.
In L.A.
Yes. Yeah. And what about this world just spoke to you? And was this the goal?
Yeah. So, I think it was kind of like, so I was challenged with fashion, and I'll explain why. So, when I went into my high school years, I went to a private school here in L.A. that was all boys, and there was a dress code, so not a uniform. Dress code was you had to wear a collar shirt and khaki pants every day.
Oh.
You couldn't wear jeans. The khaki pants could be, or chino pants could be whatever color, but whatever. So
it's like you worked at fucking AT&T or
something. And it's funny, and all, like, the uniform was so basic for, like, it was like 70-80% white boy.
Yeah.
And they would just wear their, like, dad's polos and, you know, just, like, cargo shorts. And then the worst was when they would wear Hawaiian shirts. That was pretty bad.
I love that that's always the go-to, like, hey, we have a boring fuck wardrobe.
Tommy Bahama Jr.
It's Hawaiian shirt Friday. Yeah. And then you're just like, oh, wow, now I feel so festive.
I actually took that as my kind of calling to make myself just, you know, fashion to me became a thing of, like, pride, where I was like, I'm proud because I look really fly and I look different from everyone else. So I used to come dressed like crazy every day. Like, not crazy, but, like, I would go to the mall or go to, like, Ross or TJ Maxx or Marshall's, because that's where my mom made me shop, and buy, like, the old polo, Tommy, Nautica, Perry Ellis, etc. But I would make it my own, so I would try to look like the flyest kid always.
Today's episode of the About Last Night podcast is sponsored by Stitch Fix. Oh, you know what that is. And if you don't, I'll tell you. So look, if you're a guy, you're probably like me and a lot of guys. You could probably think of a million things you'd rather be doing than shopping for clothes, right? Playing basketball, watching basketball, jerking off, eating food, talking to pretty girls that think you're cool, scrolling Facebook for old friends from high school that used to make fun of you and now are stupid. Also, parking, crowds at the mall, endless browsing, and lack of advice online. It's enough to make you want to just rock the same t-shirt and jeans for the rest of your life, but you can't, because you got to adapt and you got to be you. And you can only be you if you use Stitch Fix Men. Oh, yeah. What have they done? Oh, just reimagined how to find and buy clothes, and you never even have to leave your house. It's that easy. All you got to do is go to stitchfix.com. That's STITCH.com. And tell them your sizes, your favorite type of clothes, and how much you want to spend. Then a personal stylist will get to work with you, handpicking new clothes for you based on your style and your budget. It's all for you, baby, okay? It's all for you. Like Janet Jackson said, 5 items are delivered right to your door. You try them on at home, and you only pay for what you keep. That's so great. If you don't like something, you send it back. You're not charged for it. Shipping is free both ways. So anything you don't want, you just send it back. And the exchanges are always free too. That's fucking crazy. You can get your fix monthly, quarterly, or whenever you feel like. Because guess what? No subscription required. That's actually pretty dope. A lot of places do that. Stitch Fix does not. It's easy. And the shipping is free. So why not give them a try? I promise you're going to be hooked. All right? Get started now at stitchfix.com/ALN, and you'll also get 25% off when you keep all 5 items in your box. stitchfix.com/ALN. Get started today. stitchfix.com/ALN. If you're a dude and you like clothes and you like feeling good about yourself, but you hate shopping, this is the deal for you. stitchfix.com/ALN. All right? Do it. I'm telling you, it's a great deal, okay? And I know about great deals. Fuck, I can't do that voice without wanting to punch myself in the dick. And now, back to the episode.
And it's funny, because there was always, like, a small group of kids that we would always be in competition. It was primarily me and some of my black friends.
Yeah.
We would always, like, just compete and be like, what are you wearing today, you know? So
How would you make yourself different? Like, with an, would you like cut a sleeve or
No, I wouldn't do anything crazy with that. It was just more like, what did you wear to stand out? Like,
yeah.
Did you get the color block Tommy or did you just get the solid Tommy?
Yeah.
You know,
or
did you go jacket over the sweater?
Yeah, like, did you stuff go, like that. You know,
thong outside of the shorts.
Right, so, like, you know,
that was
it wasn't
move.
Anything yeah. crazy yet, Salt, obviously.
You started that?
Yeah, that
oh,
was wow. me. Okay.
But, like, you know, people would always say, like, oh, you must be really rich because you dress like, you know,
yeah.
like you just look like
yeah.
whatever. I'm like, no, I'm not. I actually just, like, take pride or whatever. So that always, to me, made me feel, like, better because I was always in my mind, oh, fashion is an outlet for me to express myself and then also breed confidence because it's going to make me feel a certain way. And that's mm-hmm. to me, like, to this day, when I wake up, my outfit to me is super important because it's a representation of myself. And if you think about it, it's not a superficial thing, but people judge you first on how you look.
Yeah.
And obviously, once they get to know you, they judge you on you as the person.
Yeah.
But that's just that instant thing.
When I look
thing.
At someone
yeah.
first glance, it's like I have at least a stereotype in my head
sure.
of what that person is based on what they're wearing. And
yeah.
hence, I've always been proud of, like, when making a decision stylistically of
yeah, and that's just mind. And that's just a natural thing that I think all human beings do. I don't think it means like, oh you're so judgmental. It's like, no, you when you see someone, your brain just kind of looks at them and goes, okay, what can I deduct from what they're wearing?
How they right.
look? Like it's a natural thing. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, but
right.
yeah, it and it's funny though to me that you're in a school that hey, this is the dress code.
Right.
And they're probably doing that because they don't want you know, some kids to be really well dressed and other kids not to be well dressed.
Right.
So they're trying to make sure that everyone's kind of the same. But then even then, to kind of quote our friend Jeff Goldblum from Jurassic Park, life finds a way. Like right. creative finds a way. Like
yeah.
you found a way
right.
to be
so like
oh, let me still find a way to stand
this,
out.
Into this range.
Yeah.
Because if they allow you to wear jeans and or t-shirts, the range goes like that, right?
Right, right, right.
This smaller range, okay, we can kind of control you. But
yeah.
like you said, if you're creative and you're into it, then you're like, okay, it's actually easier. I can just go crazy into the range that, you know, that I can go into and make it the best that I possibly can.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that was like my years in high school. Then I went to USC.
Fight on.
1-0. And fight on.
That's right.
And
suck at Stanford.
So then.
What did you study there?
I studied business with an emphasis in entrepreneurship. And my business plan was 5-4. So,
oh, shit.
Yeah. So what's funny is like there's this term called. So when you get money, whether it's scholarship, your parents, or financial aid
yeah. mm-hmm.
you get a discretionary account.
Yep.
And your discretion account, I never bought one book in college. I used to take my discretion money and shop for clothes at the bookstore.
Yeah.
And I would have to buy the stupid workbook to class. So that was the only one. And my best friend would always buy the books. So I would just borrow it and
awesome.
Cram, obviously.
Oh, dude, I wish I had that life.
Yeah,
so it was
the
good.
The books
so
were so expensive.
So then I used to just buy, like, USC gear. They had, like, a little bit of polo and some Nike. So I used to buy, like, even that, you know, just to... Because, again, it was like, I always wanted clothes. To me, I've been always obsessed with clothes.
Also, and USC had a great selection.
Great selection. Because, right? obviously, it's the University of Spoiled Children.
Yeah. Yeah.
So... Fight on.
Yeah.
So
we're not spoiled. We're well
right.
provided
and
for.
And at the time, I thought that I wanted to go into entertainment and be like a producer or something.
Oh, shit.
Just because I came from LA and I thought either director, producer, just something mm-hmm. in the creative field,
yep.
media. And then one summer, 2001, I was in New York on the street. I was there for like a week with
looking
my friend.
Looking for GoBrain. Yeah.
Looking for, yeah, for vibe. And, and I walked into the store that I never heard of, and I spent like $400. And then I came back, I told my friend, dude, you gotta go come to the store tomorrow. It's insane. It's called H&M. It's the first one in America, blah, blah, blah. I was on Fifth Avenue. Took him back the next day. He ended up buying clothes. He's my business partner to this day.
Wow.
And for someone like him who didn't like to shop and would never spend money on clothes,
yep.
he found it as an accessible place where he can actually afford something.
Wow.
So we came back that semester at USC, wrote a business plan how fast fashion would change the American retail landscape, and how now the consumer, this is 2001, bear in mind,
holy
and
shit.
How the consumer at the time, because of the internet, would now have the ability to make decisions on their own because the media doesn't control them. Because the media essentially controlled you in the past. You have to watch this commercial. You have to watch this or this right. print ad. Now yeah. I can go and search something and discover it on my own. So now I have the decision. Now, obviously, the power is on the consumer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, the idea with that, too, is that consumer behavior would be changed because now consumers would be impacted more by things like trend because they had the ability to choose and browse and discover things on their own. So we had predicted how the American retail landscape would change and classic fashion would go away, like the Gaps and the Bananas and the J. Crews of the world, where now be more about this like trend-driven fashion like the H&M, Topshop, Zara, etc. Because mm-hmm. now the consumer has the ability to gain that access and that information. And this concept was already proved to be working in Europe and in Asia.
Oh, really?
Okay,
so there was no drawback from your professors or other peers that were like, yo, like, what was the response when you...
The response is like, what is this? But okay, cool, like you drafted this in a way that it's believable.
Okay.
Now so then I did all this investigation and I became obsessed with this one company called Zara, which obviously everyone now knows. And at the time, they, I think, only one store in the U.S. as well, but I studied their supply chain. It was based out of Spain. It was pretty insane how they reacted to from idea to trend to concept to execution to in-store in 30 to 45 days. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
So anyways, throughout the course of the semester, I realized I couldn't start a fast fashion retailer. So throughout the course by December, from September to December, there was a slang term that I made up that was 5-4, which basically means 5 minus 4 equals 1. Which equals one love. So when I was saying like, all right, Adam, all right, Ray, okay, cool, Brad, one love, whatever. So I would say 5-4. All right, so I'm saying
Glad that's what 5-4 means, because at first when I saw 5-4, I'm like, do you have to be that tall to wear it?
Right. Fuck. I don't qualify.
Yeah, what a bummer.
God, right. Damn it.
So it meant everything from one love to bye to fuck you. All right, 5-4 that bitch, whatever. Right?
Wow.
So... anyways, that was like obviously drunk college term, whatever. And then,
but
it really meant one love.
Yep. Yeah.
So we decided to print up some sweatshirts that said 5-4. We looked in the Yellow Pages, which at the time that was still relevant.
Wow. This was like the Yellow Pages, kids, was right. a book that listed all the businesses in your area.
Google on paper.
Yeah. Before you had Alexa to call somebody for you, you had to
right.
fucking
before
open
you had
the
that
book.
Bitch Alexa. Yeah.
yeah.
So
that bitch Alexa.
5-4 that bitch.
5-4. Right. So anyway, so like. So, you know, I think that...
you printed up some sweatshirts.
We printed up some sweatshirts, sold them to our friends. We're like, oh, cool, this is dope.
Around campus.
What's up?
Around campus?
Around campus and just our friends, because they had been saying 5-4, so they thought it was so novel that we did this.
Is that
on
how you
sweatshirts.
Can tell that maybe you had something with the name when you would, like, because, I mean, how do you start planting the seed with that with friends? Like, do you just kind of start just being like, yo, we came up with this company idea, like 5-4, and then.
Well, I had said the term so much that it was so obnoxious, like, kind of like the way I've been saying vibes in the last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
That.
Don't stop.
Right. So then. They just thought it was so clever, novel. Then the second semester when we came back in January, we needed to write a business plan. So throughout that course of the semester, we ended up getting the product in like 5 stores in LA, got like 7 magazine hits.
Shit.
And this is just all us, me and my partner, sending in emails to magazines with picture line
calling.
Sheets, cold calling, going to stores, the whole nine.
You see, cold calling, kids.
All right. Wait, so then
we graduated in May 2002. Our parents were like, what are you going to do? We said, 5-4, obviously. They laughed. So then what we did, we took 7 credit cards, maxed them out, went to a trade show called The Magic Show.
That's in Vegas.
In Vegas, yeah, in August 2002. Yeah. And now the show is not very relevant. Trade shows in general are not very relevant in clothing anymore. They still exist, but it not like before. It was a Super Bowl,
and
now it's
I
like
want people
pre-season.
To realize. Yeah, wow. I want people to realize the magic show in Vegas. That's not like magicians. It's
Correct.
Not. It's
Correct.
A big clothing trade show. I'm pretty sure that's where Ed Hardy really got going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He
okay.
actually got
so
going at another show, I think, called The Project Show, which is now owned by The Magic Show. But yeah.
So
he...
blame The Magic Show for Ed Hardy, everybody.
Yes.
Or thank him, depending on
right.
You know, depending on what Hummer you drive and what
maybe you
girl
think,
you roofie.
Right. Yeah. Maybe you think Glitter Tigers is awesome.
Hey.
That's fine.
I have occasionally seen one of their shirts and been like, I would not wear that. but I love that you seem like the person that would wear that.
Some girls, some girls get turned on by a bedazzled pirate. That's a thing.
Is that one of their?
I'll find one.
I want to know real quick, how tough is it to cold? When you said you got a bunch of magazine hits,
yeah,
that seems unheard of.
That was primarily done through email.
So I mean, is that just you're throwing Hail Marys?
Yeah, but at the point is like, what's the worst? No.
Totally, but right. I'm saying, and you have to have that go get them attitude, right?
Yeah.
It seems like you guys did, but also, how rare is that for a company like that that's just trying to get their name out to even get that type of attention that early?
At the time, like, because there's less competition, it was able there.
I found a bedazzled.
I think
pirate.
A lot of people don't think that they can do something.
Yeah.
So like, I guess by sheer. You know, balls that we emailed people, we actually got it, and we're like, oh shit, they responded, oh shit, they may feature it. So then we went to this trade show, did that, the show was miserable, but we got some orders. Then we kind of struggled. My partner's parents secured a loan for us through the bank. It was small, but it helped us to chug along. And then, you know, 2003 comes around, we got an angel investor, it didn't go well. 2005.
Starting a business, like, people think, like, oh, you just, like, say, I would like to have a clothing company, and then people send you clothes. It's like, no, all that money has to come from somewhere.
2005 comes around. We had put together this, like, dope book where we got a ton of press hits at the time, so it was all smoke and mirrors. The business wasn't really doing anything. But we put together this press book that made the book look like, or made the brand look so huge. It looked like a multi-million dollar brand on paper.
Mm-hmm.
So we got an investor back then. And then from 2005 to 2008 or so, you know, we expanded the collection into full collection. And then in 2007, we had a new investor group, which is a family office, buy our investor at the time out. And at the time in 2007, clothing was a very hot thing in the private equity industry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they were looking at us and another brand, and they invested in us because we were cheaper. And, you know, then 2008 hit, which was our peak year, but then the recession hit.
Right.
The whole deal. Then we went from going to 1,000 stores down to like 500 stores in literally like a month.
People were lose money. They're like, I just want to.
Chargebacks, markdowns, blah, blah, blah. We were left kind of. Another retailer put $1 million cancellation on an order or canceled $1 million order. So we're like, fucked. We're 28 years old. We don't know what to do. Our investors are like, figure it out. Good luck.
Shit.
At time.
Please make our money back.
Luckily, retail market was struggling for us. And we opened up 3 stores fairly quickly through the Westfield Group. And they supported us, gave us money to open up the stores. We quickly realized men don't have the time to shop. They don't care. They don't go to the mall. They only go when the shit's on sale. So we're like, okay, this was a bad idea. We're still doing wholesale at the time. And we ended up, you know, by 2011 came around, and we ended up finding a brand that was launching in the women's space called Shoe Dazzle. And we had heard the story because the person that was associated with the brand got Kim Kardashian involved, and we heard the idea. We were like, oh, wow, that's so novel and cool and different. How does this apply to men? So kind of went back, sat and thought about it for a month, and then basically brainstormed and said, all right, this is what we think is the best offering. You come out. It's still the same clothes, but it's just how you're serving it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what makes you different from everything else out there, because a khaki pant and a shirt is the same. It's arguable it's the same everywhere.
Yeah,
right? Or at least the range is so small.
Sure.
But what made us different was this concept that we would curate the experience for the customer, and that they would be getting something new every month. And it was, the price point was accessible. It's equivalent to like a phone plan or a gym membership or whatever, right?
Which is, I mean, and let's see, this 2011.
2011 concept to 2012 launch.
Got it. So, like, you see things, like you say, like a gym membership. You see something like a Netflix,
right,
where you're paying, like, because before Netflix, you'd be like, why would I pay $8, $10 a month to watch movies that I can go see in the theater? And that idea would seem insane back then. But now it's like, oh yeah, that's totally what you would do.
Yeah.
Right.
And now these sort of because everything's getting tailored to the individual. So now you could subscribe to you subscribe to whatever radio shows, podcasts that you want. You don't have to listen to Chuck and Fuck in the Morning just because you're in North Dakota. You could go Hulu, Netflix, 5-4. Everything's like designed towards the individual, which and the fact that you guys got on that so quickly and really innovators in the game is just
right.
It's just amazing.
Thank you. So yeah, so we launched May 2012. We got a hit on our first day.
Into this a little bit more like this too.
Yeah. We got a hit the first day on press, and my partner's friend was a host of a TV show on G4. Yep. He promoted the show for the club concept for free. Got like 1,000 members off of that, and we're like, oh shit, there's something here. And then we organically got another like 300 guys or so that signed up. So we're like, oh shit, there's something here. And then for the next 18 months, we did wholesale, we did retail still, we did the club, we had e-commerce, the whole nine. Then at end of 2013, we decided to close wholesale, close retail, close e-com, and make it exclusive for 5-4. The only way to gain 5-4 is you have to be a member. So that catapulted it because we focused just on that. We provided just one message to people that this is what it is that you can buy. People and we ended up going, you know, from then at maybe at the time it was 3,000-4,000 members, and now we have 80,000 members that are members of the club.
Yeah. What does it mean to close e-com, to close retail, to close?
So I cannot close retail, meaning I close my stores in LA.
Oh shit.
Close e-com, meaning you can only buy e-com product through e-commerce if you are a member. So it just made the brand exclusive.
Yeah, people dig
to just being a member.
They like thinking that they're an exclusive club. Like,
right.
Oh yeah. Other people don't know about this.
Right. So then, you know,
even though anybody can sign up.
Right. As 2 years progress, in 2015, we saw that there was, now that we had gotten to a fairly big size, and we saw that there was a massive opportunity in the direct to consumer menswear market, because the best menswear brands that are in the call fast fashion arena are actually women's focused brands, like your Topshops, your Zaras, your ASOSes, your H&Ms of the world. And by fast fashion, I mean brands that are direct to consumer, vertically integrated.
Now, do you think
mall stores like a Zara?
Yeah. ASOS. Now, do you think that's because they tried to get men by the guys walk in there with their women,
and part of it, but obviously men's is still a very big industry. It's just like secondary. I rather be the king of men's fashion because there's less competition than to be in the pool of like women's fashion, which is just tons of players, online, offline, both combined, this, that, all going after the same wallet. Why not be the king of men? Because the king of men to me, at least in the fast fashion style arena, is Zara. I think for a quality, price point, and fashion, they're probably the best option out there when you put those three variables into it. But Zara is perceived more as a retailer. We're perceived more as a brand, where we have more originality to what we do and all that. So, you know, 2 years ago, we looked at the market and said there's a big opportunity here. So we launched basically three brands that are category exclusive with footwear, the New Republic brand, Grand Athletic Club as the active, and Oshenta as the eyewear, and then obviously 5-4 being the core sportswear brand.
Right.
And said, let's go after this market because this market is huge. Huge. And
huge.
And there's a big opportunity there for us to go after that. So that's what we've been in the last 12 months or so. That's been as big of a focus as the club business has. And now we've been able to diversify and be able to do that, because obviously we've grown, we have a
you
ton
guys have
of staff
expanded
now.
Yeah, big time.
So I've got a question for you, because you are the entrepreneur, you're the clothing expert. Pretend we're in an episode of Shark Tank right now.
Yeah.
And you're the Mark Cuban guy.
Okay.
I come in with my pitch. I have a bunch of shirts and they're on a bunch of dwarves, and I'm like, hey, no one's making clothing for little people, specifically little people. Yes, niche market, but they're all gonna buy specific pants that have huge thighs, but not very long. Large asses, but like I said, not very long. And adult stuff, but smaller sizes. How, Mr. Andres, can we make that happen?
my gut instinct would say to you that that's a very niche industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I would probably pass on it. Okay. I like the idea because it's niche and it's focused, and you could probably end up being the king of it with very little competition.
King of the dwarves, suck it, Dinklage. That's right, with my dwarf clothing line.
I would say I would need to know more information.
Four, right?
Oh man, you've got competition.
That's my height.
3'4"
How dare you? I'm 4'4"
But like, I don't know enough about the market. Like, how big is the market size? How
not big,
you know, right? So if it's not big physically and quantifiably, right, also, yeah, right. Then I would say to you, I would probably pass on it because there's not enough revenue there and the pie isn't big enough.
So, all right, yeah, all right. But I'm because that's something where every time I try to explain to people like how I get clothes, they're always like, why someone didn't just make clothes for dwarves? And the honest to God truth is that because not every dwarf has my sizes. Like, dwarves, we have different sizes as well, like within our own community, so you can't just have an extra small.
There's the variation is instance, with men, it's easier. Like, small, medium, large, extra large, double, triple.
Yeah.
You can kind of say there's six body types for 90% of guys. And the way I look at it is, if you don't fit within that 90, then you know what? Go somewhere else, because I can't be everything to everybody.
Nope, good luck.
And I think that's something that we realized early on, because, you know, people do complain about sizing or whatnot. Like, cool, like, we just can't serve everyone. I'm going to go after the 90% of the audience.
Yeah, and I think that's true for men, because women, in general, they're buying clothes, but it's not just the simple body type. It's like, but within that medium size, there's like, I have small boobs. How does that make me, like, I have larger boobs, but then my waist is
girls, the variables are even much more. So it's much more of a pain to go into that kind of model where they don't get choice. The subscription concepts out there that exist for women all are revolving around choice, as opposed to our concept that revolves around no choice. But it's fundamentally the biggest difference.
Men don't like choices.
Men don't like choices.
No.
Women do. So very simply, for the world that needs to understand why we do what we do, that's why.
Yeah. When did you start to get celebrities involved?
Since 2002, actually.
Yeah.
So we always had celebrities wearing 5'4". We started, I think, our first celebrity. Like, for instance, when we launched 5'4", I had been a club promoter in college, so I had like 2,000 people come to the party. I had like Tommy Lee, Deftones, Run DMC, just through like my network. And my first friend to wear 5'4" that was a celebrity, who's one of my best friends to this day, is Omar Miller. And Omar Miller, that was on Ballers, CSI Miami, 8 Mile, the whole deal, or he's still on Ballers. He was actually the host of the party in 2002. So at the time I met him, he was like, oh yeah, I just shot this movie with Eminem called 8 Mile, coming out within a few months or so, and I'm shooting Fat Albert right now as well.
He was Fat Albert?
He filmed it initially as Fat Albert, and then there was a studio change or something.
Wow.
So he was the initial Fat Albert, but he was in 8 Mile, and it wasn't even out yet, but I was like, oh, this guy's cool, he's funny, whatever. Yeah. So we became friends, like, yo, bro, can you host my party? He's like, cool. And now we're like very good friends to this day, of course. So
and like Efron and Blake Griffin and Chris Paul. I mean, it's just like,
yeah, so I mean, now like Mark Wahlberg, et cetera. So, you know, now we have like some of the biggest stars in the world that wear 5'4". Part of it is because they love the brand, obviously, and part of it too is because we've become friends with them, and a lot of it is just like we're average normal people. Like, we all kind of, everyone comes up the same way essentially, or at least 98% of people. Like, the privilege are very few and
That's why they call it the 1%,
right? So like,
it's 1%.
So like, you know, we speak the same language as a lot of people, what like really matters to us at the end of the day. So like, you know, we don't get like starstruck by a celebrity, because to us, like, everyone's the same essentially.
Yeah.
But you know, we've been fortunate, right? So we've been very lucky.
Except Oprah. There's no way
she doesn't even poop. She doesn't have a butthole.
Yeah. Right.
That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah.
So we've been pretty lucky that almost every male celebrity, major male celebrity in the world, has worn 5'4" at some point.
Is that like an email or sending a box of shit and being like?
It's been a combination. Like, for instance, I remember like 10 years ago, we sent Tom Brady clothes, and we found out what the best way to get players' clothes are, and we just did it. It was literally a Hail Mary, and next thing you know, he's wearing it in a press conference, and we're like,
"Is that how you saw it?"
Yeah, we literally saw it at a press conference.
I mean, do you just freak out?
Yeah, we're like, "Oh shit, he's wearing fucking 5'4".
We gotta get
nuts.
That footage, right? Or then do you go, "We gotta get in touch with him to do maybe a photo shoot"?
Yeah, no, it wasn't really that. It was just we kept sending him clothes every now and then, and
because he's not saying it in the press conference, though. Like, how do you capitalize on that exposure?
Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. Bear in mind, at the time, is very, very different. This is probably 2007. This is pre-social media. Now, obviously, it's very easy to post things. Tweet like, for instance, out, Mark Wahlberg's probably the celebrity that wears 5'4 the most.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we've become friends with him and the entire deal. So, like, it's different now because now there's a lot of content and photo assets out there that exist with Mark wearing the product. Or Chris Paul. Again, he plays 82 games. If he's wearing 5'4 pre and post game and 25, 40 of them, whatever, there's content and assets that exist fairly easily that I can go literally on my phone within minutes and find it. 10 years ago, I could not.
Yeah.
So now it's very easy to get the content, promote the content. So back then, it was just more like, oh, it's cool if this guy would wear it.
Yeah.
It's cool if that guy would wear it without us taking an opportunity approach to it. It's more like, that guy's cool. We want him to wear 5'4". And whatever happens out of it, we're not trying to monetize it. It's just good for the brand.
Is there somebody that you would like to wear that's not, that you haven't yet sent? Like the same way that you ask an actor, a director, like, who do you want to work with someday? You know, like, do you ever think about like, fucking Tom Hanks could probably rock some of this shit? Or again, Oprah, like, who knows? Like, she could be Stedman, I guess. Stedman might be looking for a change.
Right.
And is having trouble finding, you know, the clothes that fit his style, his vibe. Stedman is constantly lacking vibe.
Right.
I've said this since 2002.
Because she controls the vibe.
She does.
She controls all his vibes.
She does, dude.
So in terms of who, I mean, I don't know. Obviously, some of the product we're making now, like for instance, for the 5'4 Man Shop.
Is make
product,
a little wish list, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like obviously, like call it what you want to call it, but I think Kanye is the most influential men's fashion figure in the world by far.
Really?
There's no close number two in my opinion.
There's not. Why?
There's not. Because he owned it. He owned it from the day he came out as an artist that fashion is everything to me. And that spoke home to a lot of people. Spoke home to me because I would spend the majority of my income on fashion. Spoke home to a lot of kids. And he was passionate about something apart from just his music.
Yeah.
And there was his music as an outlet to promote that obsession. And then in the media, he talked about, and then on top of that, he talked about a lot of other things that made him more controversial and whatnot.
But then but at the same time, even when people make fun of his fashion choices, they still are interested in them. Like, they still get a lot of press. Like, sure, you can make fun of the Yeezy boots all you want, but a lot of people wear them, a lot of people talked about them, and then you can say, like, oh, well, they're way too expensive for people. It's like, well, yeah, because then he wants to apply to that. He wants it to be that
his
exclusive
taste and style
thing.
Has impacted hundreds of billions of dollars in retail.
Yeah, because
which is insane.
Adidas either bought Yeezy or they come out with a shoe that looks a lot fucking like it. You know,
right.
So
Adidas makes the Yeezy for Adidas.
Got it. Yeah. So it's
but now there's a lot of copycats of the Yeezy by other brands now.
Yeah, there's kids I see in the malls that have,
or the fake Yeezy,
right? Which you get
on like the Tmall or Alibaba or whatever.
That's what I got when I was in China.
Right,
fake Yeezys.
Fake Yeezy.
What up? Come at me, Kanye, if you want your money.
Go ahead.
And then I think it would be cool to like outfit someone completely like take. I'm just throwing it out loud. Like Barack Obama, who obviously dresses like a dad, but he's still obviously the dopest president of all time.
For sure. And he's
like, you could actually make him cool if he gave you the opportunity. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think what's cool about 5'4 is that I've seen guys from age 15 to age 65 wear 5'4. It's just a matter of how they wear it. And 5'4 doesn't have an age. It's more, we have more of a state of mind. So if you're an open-minded person to the world, if you're a discoverer, if you like to explore, if you like you know, if you're open-minded in general about all things in life, from, you know, everything you could think of, you know, as long as you have this open mind, then 5-4 is the brand for you, because that's what we talk about. So, you know, we're not a brand that talks about like politics or religion, but our stance is like, whatever you are and what you choose is what you are, you know?
I love that there's more, like, I don't know. There's no clothing line I know of that has this much, like, thought and deeper message behind the whole strategy of what you're trying to put out there. It's like, you know, I know the Gap is like, you know, buy our shit. Your calves will look good and your tits will look pretty good, you know? Right. And it's like, all right, well, that's going to get you only so far.
Right.
But, like, I don't know. And it's, and you know, from the people I've also met, the work there, like, everybody seems to be on board and sharing this, like, and it's like constantly being funneled through everything you guys are doing. And even like when I kind of got to peep in and see like one of the meetings, it just seemed like very, I don't want to say intense, but like everyone just being very like committed to like what's the next move here, you know?
Right. And you know, my approach always has been, you need to be, at least in business, always on the offense, not on the defense. And I don't know if you watched the Apple thing today, the Apple 10 and the...
Yeah, what is that?
The whole deal. But like...
Everyone's saying it's going to be terrifying and the end of the world. And it's $1,000 for a phone?
Yeah. Obviously, I'm probably going to get it too, but yeah.
Why? What is it going to offer?
They have this thing where you can... Yeah. It's a little gimmick where you can talk into it, into the emoji, and the emoji talks and sends a message. So for instance, say you take like...
You can talk with you as the poop emoji.
With you as the poop emoji.
Yeah.
And send a message like that.
Okay.
Whatever. That's part of it. The camera's insane. But the poop emoji is what's going to get the kids like crazy. You know?
It's really, you cater the kids with these new phones, don't you?
Oh my God. The whole thing was like, okay, I can see like every girl like doing the little.
Doing the filters.
The little filters and this like and that. Talking. Oh my God, you're so cute.
If they add more filters on these phones, like if the iPhone comes with its own filters now and fucks with Instagram and Snapchat, that's going to be a game changer.
Right. That's
and
crazy.
The end of the world. And guess what? The end of probably sex for some dudes, because they're going to be like, look, I don't care what you look like as a fucking dog. Stop sending me that.
Right. So I think, you know, for us, there was this quote that Tim Cook had said, that Steve Jobs always said, that it's about skating to where the puck is going.
Yeah, not where it's been.
Not where it's been. Yeah. So it's the same thing. Always be on the offense. So for us, it's funny because our competition is always trying to look at what we do
for sure
and to copy.
You ever
and
see
like
spies?
One of them is like three or four of my fired employees. So yeah.
Wow. See, boom. Dude.
But again, we don't care, because like the secret sauce is, at least from the top, it's me and my partner.
Yeah, you can't tap your brain.
Yeah, you can't tap the brain, and then obviously the staff that we.
It's nothing but goat in there.
Yeah, so it's about the ideas. A lot of times come from us, and then it's about the team that surrounds you that helps execute your ideas, and a lot of times with great people, like make your ideas even better. Mm. So I think that, you know, for us, you know, cool. Like we have this joke that we will write and put a fucking billboard out. Of what we want to do. Good luck to execute it. And then good luck to know what's in our mind for the next step. Because everything, it's like a big game of chess. And like, we know where we want to go. And yeah, you can start to see things. Okay, this is where these guys are going. But we're already like three steps ahead on to the next plan. Mm-hmm. We're on the iPhone 15. You know what I'm saying?
Wow. What's an average day? Look, when you come in, let's say you got a day of meetings and stuff. Do you sit down in your office? Do you check some emails? Do you have a sip of coffee? Do you check Twitter? Like, what do you...
Yeah. So I wake up around between 7:30. My partner, if he listens to this podcast, is probably going to laugh because I'm a late person. Yeah. But I usually read 2 hours every day.
Of what?
The news, email, everything from CNN to Wall Street Journal to Vogue to Women's Wear Daily. To Hypebeast, to Complex, to GQ, to just keep relevant.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then obviously check social media, see what's cool, what's new. There are new product release. What are my friends doing? Whatever.
Now you're a foodie. What's your breakfast go to?
Actually, I don't like breakfast. So typically it'll just be like a bar and a yogurt and that's it.
There you go.
If I'm pretty hungover, I'll do some sort of green juice or something. It's more lunch. I'll do like a salad or whatever.
Yeah.
So my day typically in the office starts between 10 and 11. Today I had to be there at 8:30 in the morning, but I was late, of course. But when I my meetings typically start at 11 and they're usually slammed all the way until 6:30 p.m. So I don't typically take lunch. If I do, it's for 30 minutes. I'll run to the market and grab something and come back or Postmate something or whatever.
Yeah, but it,
but it's like back, it's to, back, kind of to, back to back to back to back to back. And I used to do 1 hour meetings. Now I cut the rule is 30 minutes now. Because I just have to get to... If I can't say what I need to get and my team to be able to get in 30 minutes, then we there's a bigger problem that we have.
I feel like an hour meeting is like filled with... A good hour meeting,
and
a lot of chit-chat.
Really bad attention span, so...
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Well, you're doing great here.
Yeah, and I just like...
I put my phone on airplane mode.
Yeah, I think that actually... I doubted that move for a minute, but I think that's been the key ingredient.
And I took the Bluetooth off my iWatch for the thing. So.
How is the iWatch?
It's great.
Game changer?
Dope. The notifications are great because it allows me to see quickly if it's relevant or for me to check or not.
Now, you're a guy that's ahead of the game. How do you see, like, do we go, I mean, people joke about
it. Well, the new iWatch has a telephone in it.
Wow.
Like, you can just use
the phone.
You
can just straight Dick Tracy somebody?
Yeah.
See, that's what I want. I had the Dick Tracy watch, and I pretend to be Dick Tracy.
And it's the same size.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to watch the videos. They explain in detail, but it's pretty gnarly.
Will we ever get, like, chips in our heads?
Maybe. Who knows?
I hope we do.
Right? I think that'll be dope. That'd be dope.
You know? I mean, fuck, dude. They'd
change the chip in your head.
See?
Pre-program it like that sex robot thing.
Oh, my God. They're going to kill us. Watch.
Please don't set the dwarf chips on kill.
Yeah.
That's all we need. You don't need the dwarf uprising.
Chucky in real life.
3-4s. But here,
I want to know about I want to know about your club promoting days, because that's bonkers.
Yeah.
And Brad and I, I'm sure both at SC, like, went to outside promoted.
Did you guys both go to USC?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, shit. Fight on.
Yeah.
Fight on, baby.
Indeed. Fight on.
And I went to
a lot of USC players that now are in the league.
I know that.
Or wear 5-4.
That's incredible,
dude.
We have
a pretty big roster.
That's got to be like an
extra.
Pretty
much every single USC player that's gone on to the NFL wears 5-4.
How dope is that?
Dope.
Right? I mean, like, that's got to be like an extra special thing when you're like, we started here and now.
USC's a school of great pride.
Fuck yeah, dude.
So it's like a big thing for us when they, you know.
So because of that, I'll see. I can't remember his name. At Clippers games all the time. He works at 5-4.
Billy Crystal.
Bernie?
No.
Yes, Bernie.
Bernie, yeah.
I mean, do you guys get similar access to, like, SC stuff because of that? I mean...
Yeah, so usually once they announce that they're going to the league, then we have access.
That's so dope.
Yeah.
Wait, so how do you get into club promoting, and what did you love about it? What'd you hate about it? What made you finally get out of it?
I did a couple of things. I did club promoting. I used to make fake IDs.
That
was actually my main source of income.
Yeah.
Imagine.
During college. Luckily, those days were way, way, way past.
Do you buy a machine? How does that work?
I don't really want to.
You find a shady dude outside of a Quiznos?
If there's a statute of limitations, I just want to make sure.
Yeah, for sure.
But it was all legal.
But it was all legal. I was just allowing kids to go get drunk.
For sure, dude.
You're an entrepreneur.
Club promoting, so like I was just pretty popular, and my best friend was pretty popular as well, so we just got together and threw clubs. So between that and the IDs, we were able to, or I was able to sustain for a while.
Dope.
And I used to be able to go ball out at the club and spend like $150 at the bar tab, which to a 20-year-old college kid, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah.
That's
you're like
money to
Diddy
me
of,
yeah.
Of like the shitty bar.
You bought
USC.
Six Coors Lights?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
The Nino.
Yeah.
Also, I remember going to those outside club promoted clubs in like on Sunset in college. Mm-hmm. And I felt so cool, like fucking just getting in, and then it was just like it was overwhelming. First of all, because I think I went to one nightclub when I was in high school in downtown Seattle, but it was just like weird and ghetto, and there was nobody really there, and we went on an off night, so I didn't get a true club experience.
Right
out here, gave it to me, and it was like done right. I'm sure, dude, it could have been one of your events.
Yeah, probably.
But
well, now it's funny because so my best friend still is in the business, but he's a club owner a restaurant owner now.
Dope.
And the joke that we were saying the other day, that back in the day we used to be able to each bring 250, 300 people on our own. Now it's any fucking dickwad with like a Facebook, Instagram, Twitter handles, a club promoter.
I know.
And it's like, I bring 20 people, pay me $200. It's like, gone are the days of like the super club promoters that they used to be able to bring hundreds of people on their own.
Wow. Wait, so these club promoters, and how do they do it? They just have their group of friends, and they go,
I don't even know.
Yeah.
But it's...
Be really, really good looking.
write something.
Any crazy stories? Any crazy fights or like, I don't know.
I once got spray canned with mace by accident because there was a fight that broke out outside of a club. And I actually was trying to break up the fight because I knew one of the people. And then the cops just sprayed the fuck out of everyone. And then I got...
You didn't have the bandana to pull up and cover your ass.
No, this is pre-bandana.
And that's how the bandana got started.
Yeah.
PB, pre-bandana. Or BB.
Yeah. Before bandana. Oh, and just curious, because just in case any of our listeners are out there that I know our listeners, and they'll probably be mace in the future. How do you get that sting out? Is it just water? Is it milk? What do you do?
I got water, and then it went out 3-4 minutes later.
Okay.
So it was
all right. It was fine. So if you're heading to a protest.
There you go, bro.
Bring that. Dude.
Have to go? Yeah, sorry, real quick.
Yeah.
You saying protest, maybe just think, yeah, are you good? Oh, great.
Okay. We'll
probably another 5 or 10.
Yeah. Cool.
Easy. When you see like the protests and stuff, when you see things that are crazy and national news,
yeah.
Like when you saw like the guys walking through with tiki torches and Heil Hitler, were you like, please God, do not let one of these fucking white men be rocking a 5-4 polo?
Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy to me that even still happens.
I mean,
and that
even
it happens. Like, I understand it still happens, but that it happens out in the open like that. I mean, I don't know.
Same way you're watching TV going like, Tom Brady's wearing our stuff. That's you're like, not, no, Charlottesville, no, do not wear 5-4.
I obviously, we do not condone that. We
right,
do not,
well, because that's what happened.
Completely,
that's what happened with Pepe the Frog thing.
Not the vibe, bro.
Pepe the Frog had nothing to do with white supremacists, and then all of a sudden they like adopted it, and then
right.
And then the creator's like, whoa, no,
yeah,
the frog is not racist.
No mas.
What's Pepe the Frog?
It's a meme that the white supremacists kind of adopted as their own.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah, and it's a cool looking frog, and now you can't have it or post it or do anything because people are gonna think you're a Nazi.
It's the same way. I think there's a comedian that has a bit about like he was like Hitler fucked up the stash. You know, like
yeah,
right.
There's a lot of people that used to rock that.
Right,
and we're good dudes. Can't do it anymore.
November.
Yeah.
I mean, make sure that shit's long and covers
right.
Almost
you're
a
like,
cheek.
No, it's the Charlie Chaplin. Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
keep saying that.
Yeah, that's right. Chaplin must have been so bummed. People, if they, I mean, you've given a great endorsement for it, and thanks for doing this, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you.
You do many podcasts?
I've done 2 or 3.
Nice.
All right. Yeah. Well, we're on that short list.
There
awesome.
You go.
And then, so how do people sign up for 5-4
Yeah,
Club?
So you go to 5-4club.com. It's FIVEFOUR club.com. It's a pretty short quiz. It takes 30 to 60 seconds. And for all the audience here, we're going to do a code till the end of September, about last night, all one word, about last night.
Look
so you guys know how to spell it if you download it, obviously.
Yes.
And
if not,
that code
look at your
will
phone.
Give you, right. That code will give you 50% off for your first month of 5-4 Club, which traditionally is $60, but for this month, it's going to be $30 for you.
That's amazing. Well, get on it, listeners. Head on over to 5-4club.com and type in the code about last night. About last night. Look fresh. Look good.
Look the best out of your crew. Get
look,
the girl.
Look,
you know?
Look as good as
get
Adam and I do
get
right now.
It is.
Yeah.
Really quickly, can we end with like a quick rapid fire 10 question?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Please.
Favorite food?
These tacos.
Can be, yeah, these can be one word. Favorite city?
Tokyo.
Your favorite hero?
He-Man.
Dude, that is an unbelievable. I want to ask why.
Some
like,
would say Nelson Mandela.
You know why?
They are assholes.
That?
I like
that?
The merchandise.
They did brand him.
I used to rock the sword, the lunch pail, the t-shirt.
Everything. So, favorite Saturday morning cartoon?
Saturday morning cartoon. Popeye.
Yeah.
All right. Good choice.
You know what's so crazy, too? You look at Olive. It's like, she was fine.
Yeah.
But like, you're Popeye, dude. You're fucking
she
jacked.
Would have been an Insta model.
She would have been, wouldn't she?
She would have like 500,000 followers.
She would.
Tag your sponsor.
Someone please do that. Someone like make an olive oil Instagram page and just like sexy olive oil, just doing like duck face lips.
She was sexy, right?
Tag your sponsor like in beach cities across the world, on yachts.
Oh, God.
Like flashy cars.
Fit tee. Favorite clothing item?
Clothing item?
Yeah.
Jacket.
Mm-hmm. Dope. Favorite season?
Winter.
So you wear more jackets.
More layers, bro. My nickname is the Layer King.
The Layer King?
I wear layers in
That's
the
very
summer,
He-Man
spring,
of
summer,
you.
Fall, winter.
That's good very for He-Man. Cakes and good for fashion.
Dude. In the summer, I do very light layers.
Yeah.
Like all super fine cotton or linen. In the fall, winter, I do wool and cashmere.
Yeah, you rock those in the winter.
I mean, I'm wearing three layers now, and it's hot as fuck.
Yeah. But you're rocking it.
Biggest mistake that men commonly make in fashion?
Just wear t-shirts and jeans.
Mm-hmm. Got it. What does that say? It just says you don't try?
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't, because it's basically like you...
Give it a little something extra. T-shirt and jean is the uniform. Just add a little, one little vibe to it.
Add a bandana.
Sure.
What if you got a cool beard situation going on? Is that the addition? A hat?
No. Maybe then cool shoes.
So it should be below the neck additions.
Sure. It ranges on the guy.
Below the neck additions was a great
boy band.
Great boy band of the 90s.
Great
below
point
the neck
of reference
additions.
There.
Absolutely.
Favorite podcast?
Hint.
About last night.
Perfect.
You're goddamn right.
Favorite sport?
Soccer.
Favorite site? Website.
Favorite site?
Yeah.
I hear 54club.com is pretty good.
Instagram. I mean, that's not a site, though. 54club.com. Yeah, 54club.com.
Like one that you go to that you, I don't know, do you have a, like something like the chat, something that you go to for funny stuff or?
Instagram.
Yeah.
I literally just look at Instagram. That, to me, is my hub for everything.
It's kind of amazing the amount of shit you can see on that fucking app.
Like, yeah.
There is.
I think if you were to ask me 5 years ago, what's your favorite site? I would say, like, New York Times or, like, Hypebeast.
Yeah.
But now it's like I get it all consumed in one platform.
You can get
platform.
Your news from Instagram too if you want.
I get everything through Instagram.
Yeah. Fuck.
Like, I don't have the patience
to watch what's going
on
in
three-hour NFL game.
From Instagram.
Yeah.
I go on, I refresh it every 15 minutes. House of Highlights, SportsCenter, the whole nine. I follow a few accounts. I get everything through there.
Amazing.
Favorite girl type?
Horny and single.
brunette, Spanish, Italian, Latin vibe.
Whoa. Latin girls are pretty sweet, huh?
Yeah.
Favorite dwarf type?
3/4.
All right.
Nice.
All right. 3/4. I like it. Coming to the fall collection.
Coming to the fall.
3/4club.com.
Boom.
Not a bad spinoff.
We're launching it.
And last one, favorite thing to do on an airplane, because you travel a lot. And we travel a lot. And I'm looking for a new favorite thing to do.
Download everything you want to watch on your Netflix account onto your iPad and watch on the plane.
You can download stuff from Netflix onto the iPad?
On the Netflix app.
Yeah.
What? And then it allow once
Is that
you
what
watch
everyone's
it,
watching on the plane next to me?
Yeah. And then when you watch, like, I watched all of, so I went to Mexico City 2 weeks ago. I watched Narcos season 3 all on the flight there and from back.
Oh, fuck.
Get in the game, man.
Literally,
it's changing.
Like, yeah, it was
great. I need to get an iPad.
And you need to get the big iPad.
I know.
It's obnoxious, but it's the best.
I assume people were
the best.
I assume people were getting stuff off iTunes. No.
No,
because the problem is the streaming on the if you're trying to stream it on the plane, the streaming's super slow, so you have to pre-download it beforehand. So I literally downloaded the whole season beforehand.
How long does it take? How much space you need?
Who cares? Like, you do it overnight.
And then you just delete it when you're done watching it, yeah?
It actually pings you to delete it when you watch it, when you're done. So as soon as the episode ends, it said, would you like to delete and watch the next one? Yes.
So it's almost like the the masseuse at the Korean spa after the happy ending. She brings the towel up.
There
She's
you
like,
go, bro.
You're done. Now it's time
there
to clean up.
There you go.
Up.
For $60 a month, you can join that subscription too.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.